Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Marty Lurie, sports producer and host of the radio show Right Off the Bat with Marty Lurie. It's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers, Mark Fainaruwata and Lance Williams. Mr. Fainaruwata and Mr. Williams are award-winning investigative reporters for the San Francisco Chronicle and authors of the best-selling book, Game of Shadows, which rocked the sports world with the revelations that monumental athletic accomplishments in many sports were achieved in an unnatural way. The story focused on Balco, a nutritional supplement company which supplied performance-enhancing drugs to professional athletes. Refusing to reveal their source in the grand jury investigation, Fainaruwata and Williams were sentenced to 18 months in federal prison. They were spared serving time when their source chose to come forward. With San Francisco Giants slugger Barry Bonds, the central figure of the Balco case, poised to break the all-time home run mark, these two journalists join us to talk about the state of performance-enhancing drugs in sports and what's next. Please welcome Mark Fainaruwata and Lance Williams.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Nice to see you here and not in jail.
Yeah, it's a great day when you don't have to go to prison.
I'm interested to find out how you got involved in this subject to begin with. Why you two?
Well, we started on this really just as an assignment at the newspaper. The Balco lab, Lance worked on the investigative team. I had just joined the investigative team. My background was in sports. And I was just sitting around basically at the office and was told, hey, there's a raid that was done on this laboratory that nobody had ever heard of named Balco. Can you go find out if there's a story worth covering or that we need to cover? When you went to the website for this company, Balco, it was a vitamin company, basically. They sold legal supplements. But there were all these famous athletes whose names were on there. Barry Bonds was the most prominent, but you had Jason Giambi, Marion Jones, arguably the most famous female athlete in the world at the time, Tim Montgomery, the world record holder in the 100 meters, Bill Romanowski of the Raiders, just a host of these celebrity athletes. So we got dragged into it at that point to see if there was a story to chase. And pretty soon after, we got wind of what was going on, that there was a grand jury investigation and that it was centered on the distribution of performance-enhancing drugs in sports to virtually all of these athletes.
Well, as things unfolded here, I imagine it's sort of like Watergate. You follow the money. What did you follow to get the story in this case?
You know, Mark was the first man in, and he did a remarkable job of, scoping out who might have information about what this case was going to be about. You know, when he got in, there wasn't even any grand jury testimony being taken. It was just a federal investigation. But Mark did a great job figuring out anybody who might have a possible insight into Balco, into the activities of these athletes, and in what the feds were doing. And I remember when my boss asked me to come on to help, I wasn't sure there was much else to do. He had done such a good job casting the net. But fortunately, through people I had known for many years, I did get us introduced to a different constellation of sources who knew about Bonds and drugs. And the combination, it made for really robust reporting. I mean, we did get to know a heck of a lot about what was going on.
You know, they say this was going on for many, many years, and as a sports reporter, did you ever have an inkling to do a story during the 90s with the Bash brothers of the Oakland A's and seeing them and seeing what was going on in those days?
No, I can't say that I did. I mean, my knowledge of performance-enhancing drug use was, I think, like most people of, you know, who'd followed sports the way I had and more my age, the Ben Johnson scandal of 1988 where he breaks the world record at the Olympics and then is, you know, exposed as being a drug cheat, the East German doping scandals and the sort of regime of creating doping. But I don't think it's something I ever really consciously thought about. I know my colleagues would talk about it years later as we got closer and as Bond started to develop, even before Balco, there was certainly talk in the newsroom about those kinds of things, and stories got published. I mean, there was some good work done on the steroids issue prior to Balco happening. The problem was that you didn't have names attached to it in many cases, because largely because you didn't have a federal investigation that was forcing people to testify before a grand jury.
So now the grand jury happens, and the big break really in the story, which forced the people involved to not be able to deny what happened, was the grand jury transcripts coming out with the testimony that was in there. Is that accurate, that that would be the big break that turned this investigation around in the public domain? Because a lot of good things have happened since the investigation took off.
Yeah, you know, we did a couple of stories for the Chronicle, three really important stories we thought, quoting from federal documents, as saying Bonds and Giambi had gotten banned drugs and so forth. But there was nothing like being able to quote the athlete's own words in terms of the audience accepting this as being true, and in terms of policymakers as actually wanting to tackle it. When we were lucky enough to quote from their actual words, things started to happen.
And then things started to happen to you guys as well, because that's when everyone wanted to know, well, how did you get this grand jury testimony with the accurate words of Barry Bonds or Jason Giambi or whoever else was before it? What did you think at that point? Because ultimately you got into a real fix with the courts, where you were sentenced to 18 months in prison for not revealing the source. So how did that unfold?
Well, I mean, it's certainly there became this sort of shoot the messenger mentality of the story in some ways. There was the component of all these athletes being exposed, but the other piece was this launching of a separate investigation into how we got our stories. And, you know, I think Lance and I both, as this unfolded, became more sort of concerned about what was happening. We knew the government was investigating. We, I think, maybe expected they would investigate, but I don't think we necessarily believed ultimately they'd turn to us. We had two things that happened to us prior to them actually subpoenaing us that were some level of comfort, and obviously they were misguided levels of comfort. But one was in April of 2005, we had a chance to meet the president. We won an award, and we went to D.C., and there was a private reception where it was, you know, 40 or 50 people, and we walked up, and Lance, who's vastly more bold than I am, walked up and introduced us to the president, and we had a really lovely conversation with him. Regardless of whatever your politics are, it was he knew about the stories. He was familiar with it. Obviously, he's a former owner of the Texas Rangers. The congressional hearings had just happened on steroid use in sports, and we talked about that, and he told us twice in the course of a four-minute conversation that, you know, we'd performed a service. So we came away from that feeling pretty good, that here's the president telling us we did a good job and we did important work. And then the other thing that happened was we met a guy who used to work in the Justice Department for Attorney General Ashcroft. And his role was, in part, making decisions about when reporters would be subpoenaed. And this was a very serious thing for the Justice Department to tackle. Going after reporters is a huge issue, and it's a, you know, clearly a First Amendment one in a large way. And he told us, look, you guys have nothing to worry about. There's no way they're going to come after you. I turn these kinds of subpoenas down all the time. Your case doesn't rise to the level of, you know, serious national security or threats to anyone's life. You guys are going to be okay. So I think we were both somewhat lulled into belief that we were going to be okay on that front. And then, you know, unfortunately, in May of 2006, I guess it was, 2006, we got called into our boss's office and were proven wrong and told we got subpoenas.
Well, great question here. Why? Because what's the motivation? Because truthfully, you helped the prosecution's case, I think, by getting the information out before the public and really, you know, turned people's ideas around that this was taking place. Pretty much convicted Barry Bonds in the media without a trial, and also got the congressional hearings off the ground. So why in the world would the government go after you? Who was the motivating force to make that happen?
Well, having followed this for all this time, I can tell you, Marty, I don't know how they think.
Yeah.
So I can't get in their heads. And why was always the question that my family, my wife and son and daughter, would always ask me in a really trying to understand way, and I never came up with a good answer. I mean, the one theory that our editor, Phil Bronstein, had was this was part of a concerted effort to bust the press's chops, that if you could get a subpoena against guys in a baseball story and make it stand up, you could get one anytime you wanted. So that's what he thought. Mark Corallo, the former Justice Department official, said that was absurd. What was actually going on was that federal prosecutors always want to subpoena reporters. It's just they usually have adult supervision and are told no. And in this case, with Gonzalez, they didn't have any supervision. He was just letting them do whatever they want. Those weren't really satisfactory answers to my family, so I finally just said, well, I don't know, maybe they just went nuts. And that seemed to satisfy my family anyway. But we have never had, in court, it was, they had the power to do this, and that was all the explanation we got.
So here we are. Obviously, the issue is, who's the source of information now during this time that you're being threatened with contempt of court, ultimately being sentenced to 18 months in federal prison? Were you in touch with the source? Was there any contact with the source to say, hey, you know, how do you feel about it? Or was there any contact to say maybe you can come forward, which ultimately did happen?
You know, we've not to dodge like most people dodge our questions, but you know, we've really never talked about the issues of sources and who our sources were, never confirmed one way or another whether this person the government says was our source, talked about conversations we've had. We just felt for ourselves it was very sort of simple. We knew what we needed to do and what we needed to take care of, which was we had made a promise, and we were going to keep that promise no matter what. That was just not an issue for us. So for us, the simplest thing was just to sort of talk with each other, talk with our lawyers, talk with our families and our bosses about what was going on and just sort of muddle through it.
We were really comfortable with the arrangement. And the arrangement was not, we won't give you up unless we get in a jam. The arrangement was, we won't give you up. And we were happy to abide by that.
Well, obviously, someone has come forward, and you're not in prison. So someone must be satisfied, without your confirming it, that the information was revealed in a certain way. So at least you're here today. Good question from the audience here. California has a shield law for reporters. The federal law is much different, as Mark described, more of a balancing test, the right of the First Amendment, as opposed to the right of what's the information that we want to get, and balancing, is it worth going above the First Amendment to do that? The question is, has the wind gone out of the sails for a federal shield law like we do have in California?
You know, I think there are good prospects for a federal shield law as a result of our case and, the Scooter Libby fiasco. I think that got congressional attention, and I think there's enough interest there that we might actually push through on that in the next year or so. Right now, according to Attorney General Gonzalez, there is no balancing test necessary at the federal level. The only, according to them, the only thing that's required is they want a reporter's information. They don't recognize any First Amendment issues at all that they have to address. Justice has guidelines, but as they say, they're just guidelines. We don't have to follow them.
You know, what I found most encouraging on the federal shield law front is we had a chance a couple of times, both before we were out of the woods on the jail situation and after, to meet with a number of politicians on the Hill on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, it was very encouraging to see the bipartisan support for a federal shield law. Certainly there are people doing the Justice Department's bidding in hopes of standing in the way of keeping that from happening. But I think there's certainly a belief within the journalism community and amongst those who are proponents of the law, of the politicians, that this is the time it's going to happen. If it's going to happen, we have the window now to try and make it real.
So Barry Bonds is on the verge of breaking the all-time home run record, the most hallowed record in baseball. His drug supplier, for lack of a better phrase, is sitting in federal prison because he won't testify against him and authenticate the written records that were seized in the Balco investigation. When Greg Anderson or Victor Conte pled guilty, why didn't the judge at that point in the voir dire of the guilty plea, which the judge has the right to do, say to Greg Anderson, knowing that this problem may come up later on where he would not authenticate records, which seemed to be hampering this investigation, why didn't the judge in the voir dire ask Greg Anderson, well, can you tell me who you supplied the drugs to? And I want to ask you about these written records, these calendars. What do they mean? Why didn't that happen?
It's worse than that. It really is. Because I remember being at that sentencing hearing, and she asked him, well, did you supply drugs to athletes? Right. He says, yeah. And then there's this long pause.
I remember leaning forward in my chair. Like,
and she just kept going. But a few minutes later, when she was taking his, he also pleaded to money laundering. The act of money laundering was writing a check to a 75-year-old bookkeeper down on the peninsula. Judge was all over that one. Well, who participated in this money laundering with you? And so the athletes' names don't fall into the public record, but this lady from San Mateo who cashed the guy's check gets her name in the federal court file. And I don't understand why people do what they do sometimes. I would have loved the judge to get proactive right there. And the whole cause of cleaning up sport and understanding what happened would have been advanced a long way.
Were you surprised at the limited way, this voir dire, where you talk to the defendant and make sure they understand their rights? But there has to be a basis for the guilty plea, and that's when you go through the facts of the case with the defendant. Were you surprised to sit there and not hear those questions asked?
Well, I mean, I think we were surprised by so many things throughout the case. We certainly were surprised at that point. I thought clearly when she was asking the questions, I said when there was this long pause, I think there was almost, you could sense the entire group that was there watching this play out, leaning forward in their chairs, waiting to see if she was going to ask the question. And when she didn't, I think there was certainly surprise, and then it added surprise when she asked about the grandmother from San Mateo. But, you know, that's been the case throughout. I mean, from the very beginning, I remember Lance and I talking about, as we sort of led up to an indictment in this case back in 2004, and we were all chasing the story and wondering if we could get names and if we could find out who was associated with it. I think Lance, who had a lot more experience with courts and cops than I did, fully expected that when the indictment was handed out and the court documents became public, you'd see the names of the athletes who'd been using the drugs. But in fact, what happened was, instead of seeing the names, what you saw were black lines where they had essentially whited out the names of the athletes, or if they didn't redact them, what they did was they referenced them in generic terms. So Barry Bonds became a Major League Baseball player. Marion Jones became an Olympic superstar or athlete, a gold medal winner. And the athletes were never identified in the public documents.
So where does the Barry Bonds investigation go now? He's playing, he's smiling, he's having a great time, he's in a slump, but he will break this record, and his best friend is sitting in federal prison. And Bonds is going about the business of making money and playing baseball. But there is a grand jury investigation still going on. Greg Anderson is in custody. Where is this going?
When Bonds testified before the grand jury in 2003, he denied taking banned drugs. He said he took flaxseed oil and arthritis balm. And the prosecutors instantly knew he was fibbing. And have taken considerable evidence on that point. Last summer, they came very close to asking for an indictment. The then U.S. Attorney Kevin Ryan, on the last day, decided no, he didn't want to proceed with an indictment without the testimony of Anderson. The next sort of decision point comes, we think, in early July when the grand jury that was assigned to Anderson goes out of business. Anderson's in prison for contempt for refusing to testify. At that point, they're going to have to indict or extend that grand jury or let him go. And so you might get an idea then if they want to take the home run king down for perjury.
They still have the testimony of Kimberly Bell, and this was his girlfriend, on some tax evasion, money laundering charges where he participated with her in putting $9,900 in the bank at one time, not the magic $10,000, so it wouldn't have to be reported. Why haven't they gone forward at least on that element of the case?
I mean, I think there's so many things we don't have answers to, unfortunately, and we believe me, we're trying to chase them down every day. I think that's been one of the questions people have asked is what happened to the tax evasion part of the case? Is it still ongoing? There certainly were taking testimony about that from Kimberly Bell, and from what we're told, continuing to investigate the tax elements of the story, as well as the perjury case. I mean, they've heard testimony as recently as mid-February on the perjury case, but I think no one really has a sense of whether the tax remains part of the case, whether that's gotten handled in a different fashion or what.
So your contempt citations have been dissolved. As we sit here today, you're free and clear of any contempt of court.
Yeah, I've got a paper hanging up on my refrigerator.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Barry Bonds. There's a number of questions about him and how he fits into the general scheme of baseball history and with athletes in general. First of all, should athletes taking steroids be respected? Because as Barry Bonds says, I still have to hit the ball. They still throw at 95 miles an hour. And what do you tell your children involved in sports when it comes to this issue?
You have to view Bonds' achievements in the light of how they occurred. I mean, he's a wonderful athlete before he used banned drugs, probably going to go to the Hall of Fame. That was his natural ability and his work that got him to that level. Steroids kicked him to a higher level, and so when you look at the numbers he's putting up, you just have to think about him in those terms. Respect, I don't know. Some athletes get into steroid use really through, you know, competitive desires. Others feel forced to use it. It's a bad situation when the game allows it or athletes feel they have to take them. So, you know, it's just a complicated mess. In terms of my kids, my boy, thank goodness, played ball all through school, but never thought of it as anything more than something that was really fun. He never aspired to go on, and so we never had to address that issue. I think it's when you've got a kid who thinks he can get the Division I scholarship or the pro contract, that's when you really have to start thinking about what he's going to do to try to kick his game up a notch.
Some people say that Barry Bonds is taking the bullet for all the baseball players in the last 15 years or so. Some were before Congress, such as a Mark McGuire, who refused to testify, and the Court of Public Opinion has condemned him, but a Sammy Sosa, and others who, if we're around the game, miraculously lost 20 or 30 pounds when drug testing became a reality in Major League Baseball. Do you agree with that maybe Bonds is being singled out, and a number of players who will get to the Hall of Fame without question are not being talked about and not being prosecuted, at least in the court of public opinion?
I don't. I know it's become sort of a rallying cry, certainly amongst Giants and Bonds fans, and I understand that to a degree. I think there's no question, you know, there's additional reporting to be done on the steroids issue on all levels. But I think the thing you have to remember about Bonds is he's the center of this because he's Barry Bonds. It's not because the media has decided to make Barry Bonds the center of this. He's chasing the most hollowed record in all of sports. He's the subject of a perjury investigation. He's at the heart of a steroids investigation by Major League Baseball. And he was directly connected, perhaps more than anybody, to two of the men who were at the heart of the conspiracy. And there's all sorts of evidence that is part of a federal grand jury investigation. You can't say that about Sammy Sosa. You can't even say that about Mark McGuire. So Bonds is a product of what the story has become, which is Balco, and he's in the middle of it. And now, you know, somebody suggested to us the other day that you know, why is Barry any different, essentially, than Guillermo Mota from the Mets, who tested positive and is facing a 50-game suspension? Well, because he's Barry Bonds, and he's going to become the home run record holder. That's exactly why.
If you were on a committee that elected a player to the Hall of Fame and Bonds was on your ballot, would you vote for Bonds?
Well, I'd vote for Bonds the same year we voted for Pete Rose. I think of him in the same way.
Well, Pete Rose, his transgressions happened after his playing career, and you could never challenge the things that he did on the field. At least there's no evidence of that. Bonds, at least, is a direct challenge to what he did on the field, and the extra home runs he may have hit from being enhanced changed his records. Don't you see a difference in that?
Well, I do. I always dodge this question. I mean, I'll admit it. I always dodge the question because, frankly, I don't have a vote. I'm glad I don't have a vote. I have really mixed feelings about, you know, my brethren in the sports writing community. That's who votes. I mean, it's as you know, Marty. And I have concerns about sports writers being the ones who are voting on that. But by the same token, I certainly don't want the players voting or the managers either. So, I think if I had to vote now, I probably would not vote for him. For the same reason I wouldn't vote for McGuire. The ballot calls for you to take into account not just numbers on the field, but all sorts of ancillary issues. And it's open to subjectivity. And I think people are allowed to use that subjectivity. There's been some criticism about about, well, you know, how can you look at McGuire differently now when everybody looked at him differently in 98? Well, the reason you look at him differently now is because there's a whole host of information and evidence that's out there now about McGuire that didn't exist in 98. And so I think the same can be applied to Bonds.
Looking at Barry Bonds and what he's accomplished, and then looking at a Mark McGuire, Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, people like that, as we sit here today, and I think you bring up a good point, and I've been asked that question as well, there's no rush to vote on these people. You have 15 years after the five-year period when they've stopped playing to vote on them, and I think a lot more will come out. But as you sit here today, do you feel warm and fuzzy towards the home run hitters of Major League Baseball as we're watching these records fall by the wayside? Well, or are you angry about it? How do you feel about it?
I'm just a fan. I'm not a sports writer. Okay. I'm a sort of second-deck fan, but I did like baseball quite a bit. No, it's just hard to be entertained once you're exposed to this. It's the problem for the game, really, to get this problem lassoed, because otherwise I think you are going to lose interest in it, at least at the margins, and I don't think it's good for the game.
In reading the book, The Game of Shadows, one thing that I took from it is that Victor Conte was this mad wizard, not only of concoctions, but he always was one step ahead with the drug testing. And even today, we don't have a test for HGH, and some of the players are still rumored to be larger than normal, and they're taking HGH. Where do you see people like Victor Conte fitting into the baseball landscape of enhanced drugs in the future?
Well, I think, you know, everybody always asks us about Bonds, and I'm glad you asked about Conte, because I think he's the most fascinating character in the whole thing, because he is, as you say, the sort of mad scientist figure. He's sort of a car salesman. He's a little bit Carnival Barker. I mean, he's just a self-made guy, basically, who was a junior college dropout and went to the medical library and studied about vitamins and ultimately about steroids and managed to basically, you know, raise himself or inflict himself into the highest levels of sport. And I think, you know, what you're going to see with baseball, and whether it's through a Conte or somebody else, is you're going to see baseball adapting to what's happened now. They never had to worry about testing. The players never had to be concerned about whether they were going to be caught using or not, even though it was illegal to use the drugs. There was no testing in the sport. Well, now what you're going to see happen, I think, and I'm fairly cynical about this, is you're going to see the players learning just like the Olympic athletes did. The Olympic athletes have had very stringent testing policies for years. They have to basically let their whereabouts be known 24 hours a day, even when they're not competing, and somebody could show up at their door and ask them to urinate in a cup. Baseball players have never had to worry about that. And now I think you're just going to see an evolution in that and them learning how to beat the test. The tests are readily able to be beaten. I mean, it's not that hard. And so, I think that the evolution is this is not going to be more Victor Conte's coming forward. It's just going to be baseball educating itself about how to beat the test.
But people like Victor Conte will be in the background when you say, here's the test, right? The Victor Contes of the world will come out and say, well, wait a minute, I can give you this drug, and then this drug won't show up in the test. And I think that's the crux of reading Game of Shadows, that Victor Conte could beat the test.
Yeah, it's going to take advances on the scientific side of testing to get testers ahead of cheaters. The other trend that we're now seeing, and Europe is ahead of us in this, law enforcement is getting involved, whereas they didn't before. You know, before Balco, it was unthinkable that the feds would waste all his time and money on a drug case where the drug is so far down on the sentencing schedule that nobody's going to do much time. But now, you know, in this winter, a big old case started to unfold in Albany, New York, internet steroid dealing, and that was going to three states. You're seeing prosecutors around the country taking steroids cases, getting more involved. And so Mark sometimes thinks that the real future is not in scientific advance so much as in enforcement sophistication with the feds working with the testers.
Well, how do you feel about that? Because we really don't hear about football players being prosecuted, although Bill Romanowski is in the book, and of course he was prosecuted and came. I think he was prosecuted.
No, he was. Well, he was just
named.
He was another witness, like Barry was. Right?
Correct. He was named in the grand jury. But where do you see this going with other sports, golfers, and of course we see with the bicycle racing, and we haven't really seen it with basketball. Right. But where is it going?
Well, I mean, I think it really does depend on, A, whether there are these advancements in science, but B, whether you continue to see this influence by the government. You know, one of the things that was most educational to me about starting to cover this story is that the drugs can benefit virtually any athlete in any sport. You can find a drug that would help you to perform better, to have more energy, to be able to work out more often, any of those kinds of things. So the question is, what do we want as a sport? And I think that's going to be part of the question, too, is what do fans want? What are they willing to accept? You know, I've always thought that the big disconnect with Balco is you could go to the ballpark and you would walk up to a fan and with their child and say, hey, do you want your kid to use steroids? And they would say, well, no, of course I don't want to do that. But then that same fan would show up at the park, mm-hmm. Barry would hit the ball 500 feet, mm-hmm. and they and their kid would be out of their seat cheering like crazy because that's the dynamic of being a sports mm-hmm. fan. So I think there's a whole issue. There are a whole set of issues. You know, if law enforcement gets more involved, if we start seeing prosecutions of athletes in the same mm-hmm. way that there are prosecutions of athletes in Europe, it changes the dynamic entirely. If you see fans starting to become turned off by the notion of players continuing to cheat and them being exposed for it, I think that changes the dynamic. But, you know, money's always going to be the driving issue here, and I think that will rule the day.
I agree with that. Bud Selig, Hank Aaron, they've gotten in the news lately. Now, they haven't directly said, well, Barry Bonds, we feel you cheated. We're not going to be there when you break the record for that reason. But indirectly, by the commissioner of baseball not showing up, he certainly gives his opinion as to what he thinks of Bonds, and Hank Aaron as well. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, Commissioner Selig commissioned an investigation of the steroid era. He retained Senator Mitchell, spending a fortune trying to do a report on the steroid era. I don't think it would be consistent with his interest, his professed interest in cleaning up the game, if he were to show up at the day Barry breaks a record, because there's a cloud over the record. Barry won't talk to Senator Mitchell until it's straightened out. I don't think it's appropriate, really, for him. It's too schizoid, really, for me. And so I'm all good with him going fishing in, you know, Wisconsin or something.
Okay. And Mark, Hank Aaron, does he have any responsibility? Probably not. But, of course, when McGuire broke Maris's record, the Maris family was there and celebrated with McGuire. It's a different world today with the information that you've brought forward.
Well, yeah, would the Maris family have shown up in St. Louis if they knew all that they knew now? I mean, I don't know. I think that's an interesting question, too. But, I don't think Aaron has any responsibility. I mean, particularly with everything that's going on. It's clear what's happened. You know, to me, if you look at the numbers that Bonds has produced, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind we wouldn't be having the conversation about the home run record if he hadn't started to use the drugs. He's undoubtedly a Hall of Fame player before he makes the choice, one of the greatest players ever, perhaps, even before he makes this choice. But the numbers are overwhelmingly clear that this has put him in this position to pass Aaron. So, I think Aaron can make the choices he does. I find the commissioner situation much more fascinating because it says everything about where the sport is. I mean, that you would have the commissioner of the sport totally conflicted about whether to show up for what otherwise would be this, you know, unbelievable moment. I mean, you know, you can imagine what they would be doing if this were completely pure. I mean, we would have, you know, every TV network could be vying for getting games as much as they possibly could to spend as much money. You know, baseball would be talking about for weeks and months ahead the kind of celebration you'd be seeing. You'd have corporate interest all over the place in it. And yet none of that exists, really. And so the fact that the commissioner has no idea whether he really should show up and is talking about this as if it's any other record, I think it just speaks volumes about where the game is right now.
So Bud Selig, MLB, they're really complicit in everything that went on up until the investigation really took place.
Sure. Baseball bears tremendous responsibility for allowing this situation to fester. I mean, at the clubhouse level, people had to know this was going on. When young men are showing up in spring training with 20 extra pounds of muscle on their frame, they had to know what was going on. And their health risks, they're putting these guys in situations where they're endangering their lives long-term for the, you know, for the short-term benefit. So sure, I mean, there are reasons baseball couldn't address it, and they're complicated, and they involve the labor agreement, and they involve the problems the game had in the 90s, but that doesn't excuse them from responsibility.
Would we have gotten to this point without Game of Shadows and without the work that you did really as investigative reporters and did the digging and following the trail? Would we have gotten here today with the Mitchell investigation, the congressional hearings, and the court of public opinion really supporting what you did? Would we have gotten here without your work?
You know, Mark and I were honored to be able to do these stories. Some people say they made a difference, and, you know, that's what we're all about in journalism. Shucks.
That's all I was going to say, shucks.
Well, was there an alternate source? You know, they always say in law, is there another way to get to...
Listen, the government could have laid the cards face up on the table back in 2004, and we'd be way farther along. They know things that we don't know about this. They know detail. They know other sports impacted. And they sit on that data, and it's of no use to anybody, really.
Well, and this is the thing, too. I mean, if you had... I mean, it is great that all of this dialogue has been created as a result of the Balkan investigation, mm-hmm. what the government has done, the reporting, and all of those things. But if you had, there are a lot of people who say, oh, well, just wait for the truth to come out whenever the government essentially decides for it to come out or however it does. But you would have had, I mean, you'd be waiting until guys are retired, perhaps, and Bonds is well past the record, possibly. If the government comes out back in 2004 and starts naming names and identifying, it changes the dynamic entirely and in many ways perhaps facilitates and expedites all of this happening and also not in such a controversial way, I think.
You know, this is still a sexy story, the Balco story, the Bond story. How come other writers haven't, national writers, how come there isn't a groundswell of writing on the investigative side? You did your investigation and you got your sources and really brought the story forward. How come this hasn't gotten wind with other writers around the country? Now, a lot of people comment on it, but no one really did what you did.
Well, a lot of papers took runs at it. The San Jose Mercury did important reporting, so did the New York Daily News. And the New York Times has been in the hunt. But it's not an easy story to get. Is what it gets down to. And we had the advantage of being based in the city and with the time to, or nothing better to do, but every morning go in and start shaking the tree again to see if we could get something. And I think the positioning we were in gave us an advantage.
Jason Giambi is back in the news. And, of course, he's an original grand jury interviewee when the Balco case started. Now he's come forward again, and somehow he is trying to be the knight in shining armor in this whole sordid affair. And as soon as he said we should apologize or baseball should apologize, the news came out, T.J. Quinn of the New York Daily News broke a story that he failed an amphetamine test last year. What's your advice to Jason Giambi?
Well, I mean, I know his lawyer's advice to Jason Giambi, which is shut up. You know, I have such mixed feelings about Giambi. I know sports writers love him because he's a good clubhouse presence. He's a good person, it seems. He's a people pleaser. And yet there's this sort of perception that Jason is about, you know, coming clean and being honest and all of that. And, you know, the reality of Jason is that he testified before that grand jury. He admitted to using a host of drugs. He demonstrated for the grand jurors and the prosecutors how he injected in his belly area and how he injected in his butt. And then he walked out and he told the public he'd never used the drugs in his life. You know, and then when he goes and he talks about this thing recently and says we all should come clean and admit it, he doesn't really come clean. He just sort of says, yeah, I used some stuff. But he doesn't really elaborate on what he's used. I understand he's worried about Mitchell investigation coming after him. The players are all in a difficult position in that way. But by the same time, you know, after TJ's story comes out about amphetamines, and they go to say, do you have a comment about this? Well, no, Jason didn't have anything to say. So, you know, I think he certainly presented himself in a better way than Bonds has perhaps in the situation. But he's not the saint I think that people want him to be.
Within baseball, we've had some people come forward, and one comes to mind for me, and I'd like to get your opinion of Jose Canseco. And Jose Canseco appeared before the Congressional Committee, and he basically said he and Mark McGuire had injected drugs essentially in the A's clubhouse in the bathroom stall. And he scoffed at Rafael Palmeiro and people like that, and it turns out maybe Palmeiro wasn't telling the truth. But what's your opinion of Jose Canseco and the things he has said about steroid use in baseball, how far back it goes, and how it involved the Oakland A's?
We found Canseco credible when he was writing about or when he speaks about things that he saw with his own eyes or did. I think the core of his story and certainly his account of what was going on both with the A's and the Rangers, I found unshakable. He's not reliable when he's doing big picture stuff, talking about people's motivation, estimating percentages of drug use, giving the history of drug use. If he didn't see it, I'm suspicious of it. But what spoke volumes for me was he's sitting there and Mac's over there and he's saying, here's what happened, and Mac just doesn't want to talk about the past. I thought that at that point Jose's credibility was established.
Mark, how do you feel about
that? Well, I remember sitting at those. I was in D.C. for those congressional hearings, and they were one of the most amazing things I've ever covered. And that was one of the things that struck me in watching that was you had this lineup of guys, you know, Curt Schilling and Palmeiro and Sosa and McGuire and Canseco sitting there, and he was the most credible guy at the table. I mean, he was far and away the most credible guy at the table. And, you know, had you asked anybody to name the most credible person at the table 5 years ago, Jose would have been last. I mean, nobody would have thought, you know, people would have laughed about Jose. But he was clearly, as Lance says, I think when he was talking about what he experienced, you know, it came off as very reliable. And I think that's proven itself. You know, Palmeiro's the best example of that, and McGuire, too, by being quiet. But I remember watching Palmeiro wag his finger to the congressman and thinking, why is that guy wagging his finger? That just doesn't make any sense. So I find Jose fairly believable.
Sammy Sosa is two home runs away from 600, which is a significant mark. There's only been a few players who have reached 600. He may do it in the next few days. No one has written anything about Sammy Sosa and how he fits into this investigation. He was before Congress. He chose his words very carefully, that he didn't do anything illegal in any country that he was in, being that he was in the Dominican Republic. Maybe things were different there as far as the laws are concerned. But he's on the verge of breaking through the 600 mark. No one says much about it in a negative sense. They're sort of lauding him, really.
Well, there is no, I've not seen any reporting that ties him to banned drug use, and so you are left with suspecting it because of the changes in his body size and so forth, and they are dramatic. And yet, we've always thought it was unfair to engage in speculation when we don't have evidence. I think the worst thing I saw last year was a column on a sports website about Ryan Howard, the young Philadelphia Philly, who was having a great year. And the column was, hey, Ryan Howard's got to be on something. Sure, there's no evidence of it, but nobody could. And so you get into this sort of downward spiral where anybody who's hitting well is automatically guilty. And I just don't want to get into that. I think that's bad, too.
Where is the Mitchell investigation going? It has no subpoena power. The baseball union has essentially reported that they've advised the players not to cooperate to some degree. Where is the Mitchell investigation going? Does it have an end to it? Is there a popular end to it?
Well, it's not going well, I don't think, and I don't know where it is going. I you know, as you say, you don't have the players cooperating. There's no reason for them to cooperate other than the purity of their heart, which doesn't seem to be a compelling enough reason for many of them, and the union is suggesting that they don't cooperate. There are witnesses that have been part of the bonds perjury investigation that the government has put off limits, essentially, to the Mitchell investigation. The Mitchell investigation really has just been standing in line behind the government in many ways, waiting to see where they go with bonds, but also stymied by this reality of not being able to get players to talk. They've done everything from, I mean, they've gone after everything. They've gone after medical records from players dating back like 10 years, phone records. But they are ultimately stymied by the reality that they can't get the players to talk. He's going to have a report. He's got to have a report. I would imagine sometime by the fall you'll see something, but he's been slowed considerably. And the question is, you know, if he has a report, how extensive will it be? Will he be able to identify players who used? What will the commissioner do about that? But if he's not, and the report says, look, I couldn't get anywhere, and these are the reasons, does Congress then get its hackles up again and get back involved in the issue?
There are players in Major League Baseball, such as Curt Schilling. They've come forward, and they've sort of separated themselves from the players who allegedly use enhancements. Obviously, Schilling had some words about Barry Bonds on Schilling's website. Is there this division within Major League Baseball? And probably there's still some who are big guys in Major League Baseball that we would suspect are using something. Then there's this vocal group of players. Is there really a division with the clean players and the ones who may be suspected? Have you seen that happen in Major League Baseball? Is Schilling a spokesman for what's going on?
Well, if he is, then those guys have a lot of trouble, because I don't find him to be terribly credible. I mean, at the congressional hearings, he was the guy who had been so outspoken about steroids and then sat up there. He was supposed to be the sort of poster child for the other side, and when the congressman confronted him about that, he said, oh, I was taken out of context, and sort of downplayed the issue. So, I'm always leery, and I don't say this about Schilling himself, but I think you have to be leery of anybody who's out there sort of presenting themselves as the public face of anti-doping from a player standpoint, because, you know, as somebody told us in the middle of the Balco case, once a steroid user, always a liar. And so I'm leery of this notion of players sort of presenting themselves in a certain way. But I don't know that there's a division. There was certainly a division enough back in 2002 to get a policy in place. The union finally buckled because there was pressure from players, I think, to get a steroids policy. But I think there's almost unanimity amongst the players now, at least that's my sense, that they would just like to get this issue over with and move on.
So a good question from the audience I'd like to throw out to both of you in general. And it's, would you care to comment on the state of health of investigative reporting in general? And I think we're talking about the Shield laws and maybe the way that things are developing there. YouTube proved it still exists. You did a great job of investigative reporting. But as the questioner says, but since 2000, that person has begun to have some doubts. What is the state of health of investigative reporting right now?
Well, shucks. The federal government's subpoenas of reporters, which did surge under Attorney General Gonzales, that's a real immediate problem to certain kinds of source reporting that we just have to get fixed, or the public will be deprived of access to independent information about the government. There's just no two ways about it. If reporters can be made into government informants anytime the government chooses, we're just not going to get information we want. The other part of the question is about, you know, the general state of the news media in a digital age, and I think there are significant financial issues right now. Hopefully they'll be short term, but investigative reporting isn't the most expensive kind of reporting you can do at the paper, but it does require you to devote resources to long term to a story, and not everybody can afford it when the budgets are tight.
Is there a middle ground or some ground of a Shield law, maybe watered down to some extent? Should there be something in the middle? And you obviously are right in the middle of it, probably could give a good opinion on that. Is there something that should be balanced here?
Well, and I think that's exactly what's been presented. I mean, the law that has been presented and was brought forth in the last month or so in both the Senate and the House side is a compromise, essentially. For years, the media was sort of all over the map, was part of the problem that you had absolutists thinking that the Shield law needed to have no exceptions. But there's, I think, an understanding now that we need some sort of a law. And so the one that's been presented is one that does call for this balancing test that says, addresses the notion of national security concerns, addresses the concerns about the threat to someone's physical well-being. And the irony of it, it's really modeled in some ways after the Justice Department's own guidelines. The Justice Department has these guidelines that for years they followed. They had a social contract that existed for 30 years with the media. They didn't issue these kinds of subpoenas. And the guidelines are explicit about that. They talk about exceptions being national security, threats to someone's life. Exigent circumstances is the phrase that's used. And unfortunately, they just haven't followed the guidelines anymore, and so now there's a need for the law. But the law is really a compromise.
The characters involved in the book, the interesting characters, the one thing I enjoyed about the book is learning about Victor Conte and who he was and how he operated. Where are all these people now? Victor Conte, Greg Anderson, and some of the others who were indicted and eventually sentenced. What happened to them?
Sure. Well, we know where Greg is. He's in Dublin in the penitentiary. Victor's back giving interviews. He just gave one, was it the Daily Mail? In London, just had a feature on him. He was bragging that he was selling more nutritional supplements than he ever had before and is driving a Bentley. Kimberly Bell, the former girlfriend of Bonds, left the area is trying to have a life for herself. Many of the Olympic athletes came to unhappy ends. Tim Montgomery, the world's fastest man, is going to prison in extortion case on the East Coast. And, of course, Marion Jones' career took another speed bump when she tested positive on her A sample, but not the B sample, last summer.
Well, what's the state of drug use around the world? I mean, we see soccer all the time now on TV, fabulous soccer matches and, you know, fans screaming and yelling. And it's really caught, I think, the attention of this country with the World Cup. But what's the state of enhanced drugs around the world?
Well, I don't know that we know. I think the one thing that we do know that is really interesting to track now is the cycling world is really fascinating right now. It's not a terribly interesting thing, I know, to the American public, except when the Tour de France is going on, and even then there's some debate about how interested the American public is if Lance Armstrong's not competing. But there seems to be a revelation every day now coming out about the use of banned drugs in cycling. You recently had a story in which the winner of the 96 Tour de France admitted that he had been using, which now makes the first three finishers in the Tour from 96 basically having admitted that they doped. And you're seeing that kind of thing more and more and more in cycling now. And what's interesting is most of the admissions about drug use, which were really rare amongst athletes, are now coming actually out of Europe and around the country. I don't know if that's because, as Lance talked about earlier, you're seeing more federal investigations and law enforcement getting involved, and the athletes are forced to admit it, or whether there's a sense of honor, perhaps, that is becoming more prevalent there. I mean, one of the things that was interesting as we covered Balco, the track stories got zero traction here in the United States. Other than stories about Marion Jones, nobody really cared very much. And even then, they didn't care much. But we got all sorts of calls from Europe when we would have stories about Marion Jones or Tim Montgomery. There's widespread interest in the sport there. So I think there's a different dynamic, certainly, among sports fans in Europe than there is here.
Do you have an opinion as to why the alleged source, I'll say alleged, came forward in your case? What was the motivating factor?
Well, I've read press accounts and I've read court record on this, and my understanding is there's a lawyer whose private eye went to the FBI and gave him up and then put on what we used to call a Fargo unit.
We call it a wire.
Yeah, and took a wire back and spoke to the lawyer and got him to say incriminating things. And I think that's how it unfolded. We had nothing to do with it, and we found out about it from a story on a website.
And when you saw that story on the website, what was your reaction?
Well, let me tell you, I thought, well, shucks, we're out of it now. And our lawyers then contacted the Justice Department. This was around Thanksgiving, and they were told, no, we want them more than ever. We're not withdrawing the subpoenas. Mm-hmm. And so when people say, oh, the guy gave himself up and you were free, that's really shorthand what actually happened. I think what happened was we went back to Washington with the lawyer for Hearst Corporation, and all of a sudden Republican and Democrat lawmakers from Congress were writing letters to Attorney General Gonzales saying, what are you doing in this Balco case? And he got sick of hearing from the new Speaker of the House, the new head of the Judiciary Committee, and as well as some prominent Republicans. I think that's how we finally got out of this.
Mm-hmm. You agree?
No, I do. I was tracking. I was in a different time period because there is a period where the story comes out publicly There's a Yahoo Sports reports about the government's investigation into the source. Well, that's how we hear about that, which is back in November. And then on Valentine's Day is when we find out we actually are out of it. And that was also from reporters. We didn't see it on a website. I remember I was in the office, different office from Lance, and I was in my office and got a call from a reporter saying, hey, you guys are out of it. And I said, well, what are you talking about? I said, oh, there's a story here that says, the government's going to, this guy's cut a plea deal and the government's come forward and they're going to drop your subpoenas. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I got to call my lawyer. So I immediately hung up the phone and called the lawyer, and she didn't know what was going on, and she called the government, and so that's how it sort of all plays out.
There's a new U.S. attorney in the Northern District of California. Kevin Ryan is gone. First of all, I'm interested to get your opinion of Kevin Ryan and how the case was handled under him and how you think this case is going to play out under a new U.S. attorney.
Well, Ryan, of course, was the lead prosecutor. He authorized the Balco investigation, and that was significant and important. He also was the person who made the decision to not reveal the names of the athletes in the public filings, and that's a decision I wish he had made differently. And he's also the one who decided not to indict last summer, a decision he has to make. He has to decide whether he's got a provable case. So he made some significant choices. I can't imagine having an acting U.S. attorney expedite the decision-making, especially now with Attorney General Gonzalez on the ropes in Washington for other matters. I think it probably makes it more complicated as they decide what they want to do.
When does this grand jury expire, and can they now impanel a third grand jury or fourth, or can they extend this one? What can happen here?
This one expires, we think, sometime in early July. We don't know the date, but we think it's sometime in early July. And then the options would be extending 6 months if they wanted to keep Anderson in jail and continue to put pressure on him. Or I guess they could impanel a third grand jury or turn it over to a third grand jury when this one expires and extend. Eventually, they're going to hit the statute of limitations, which is December of 2008. I don't know this. I just think this in my heart that they're going to make a call in July one way or the other. I can't imagine that they let this thing drag on any further. And yet I say that, and of course I'm sure they will. So.
Well, mid-July would be the All-Star game in San Francisco, probably an appropriate time to get a decision on the case. But if Barry Bonds got indicted by the federal government, let's say they chose to go forward, my question is this: do they have enough evidence on the perjury case without Greg Anderson to do it? And two, what does Major League Baseball do at that point? Let's say he's two home runs away from Hank Aaron at that point. What does Major League Baseball do? This is a big entertainment industry. As you said, fans pay $100 a ticket to come to a game, and they want to see home runs. What does baseball do, and what's the likelihood of something happening with the evidence they have right now?
Well, we know that the line prosecutors wanted to indict last summer because they felt they had more than adequate evidence without Anderson. They do have other witnesses. They have documents. There's stuff that we don't know about firsthand, but we think that they have access to that they thought was enough to make a case. The boss overruled them. So I think if they want to go ahead, at least some of them think they can make it.
You know, on baseball, we think the commissioner wants to suspend him. I mean, one of the things that the Houston Chronicle reported that the commissioner, when the book came out last March, wanted to suspend Bonds immediately, but made the decision that he knew he'd lose when the union, grieved that, basically. So I think the commissioner is obviously conflicted. He's getting a lot of advice about this subject, I'm sure. The question is going to be, if he actually does decide to suspend, then what happens? If he did, it would be using essentially, he'd probably invoke the best interest in baseball clause as the means of suspension. The union would probably fight that. And have what many people think to be a really good case. And then you'd see, probably the suspension stayed while it was being arbitrated, Bonds continuing to play, and then an arbitrator ruling, perhaps in Bonds' favor. So, but I, that's all speculative. It's somewhat educated guess, but I think – That said, even if the commissioner knows he's going to lose, I think there's some political capital to be gained if he does go ahead and try to suspend, both with Washington, where Congress is always aware of what's going on in this issue and trying to think about whether they want to get involved again, as well as with fans.
Boy. By the way, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. We're talking tonight with Mark Fainaru-Wada and Lance Williams, investigative reporters for the San Francisco Chronicle and authors of the best-selling book Game of Shadows. I'm supposed to read that every 15 minutes. As you can tell, I haven't. I'm being engrossed in this conversation. What's next for you two? What happens for you two now?
Well, we still have the obligation to follow this story out. I think Mark and I want to see if they indict. We want to see if I want to report on Senator Mitchell's report and run it out that far. I don't think I want to make the rest of my career covering doping in sports. Not that I don't think it's an important topic, but, you know, I've never worked on a story this long. Mark and I have been working together almost exclusively for 4 years, and there are other stories I might want to chase someday.
Are you getting other assignments?
We are. I mean, we've had a few stories here and there in the paper that are separate from this, but it's been a distracting past year or so. We've got, you know, we spent a lot of time involved in our legal case. That was really among the most difficult things about that was it was really hard to work because you had time constraints because you were always talking. We were always talking to our lawyers. And so there were, you know, I think we estimated at one point probably 2 days a week total where we were dealing with legal issues surrounding our case. And, of course, that was never consistent. So it was always broken up. So you never got any consistency about your job. And then there was just sort of the emotional cloud hanging over you that made it a little difficult to focus at times. So, we've gotten some work done, but we probably haven't been as productive as we could be.
Do you see another book here as this plays out a little a little bit further?
I just don't know. You know, there's so much left to find out and so much left to have happen before you could make a call like that. I think it could be really interesting this summer, though, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think if there's a trial, it would be very, very interesting to go through that and also, as Mark says, to see how baseball handles it, because this is a very big industry. And for baseball to take a tack of suspension, I'm not so sure what the reaction would be from the players, from the Players Association, and also people who pay significant money to see home runs. At the All-Star Game, we're going to have the Home Run Derby Monday night. I've been to the last six or seven All-Star Games. It has surpassed the game. And they like home runs in baseball. And I'm not so sure baseball will be very aggressive from now on.
No, I think they are completely conflicted. I mean, I think that's the most fascinating thing about the summer as it progresses is that the sport is totally conflicted about how to proceed and how to deal with this. On the one hand, they have record attendance. They've had record attendance, and people are showing up to watch, you know, Barry. And on the other hand, they have this, you know, impossible situation to deal with.
Well, we're getting to the point of maybe a last question or two. But the interesting question is, we've named the names of the Consecos and Palmero and people that we know have come before the government and Giambis. But as far as steroid use, and I guess HGH maybe is separate if I can do that, have we penetrated the steroid use issue in baseball?
I think baseball has a handle on how prevalent it is. The testing program now is a lot better than it was. If you remember the Ross Grimsley case of last summer, the relief man for the Diamondbacks, you know, he told the federal investigator, you know, I've been using steroids right along in my career, but when they started testing, I switched to growth hormone.
Yeah.
So I think steroids per se is clean upable and is probably on the way to being abated.
Interesting topic of steroids and baseball and the fans and the games. Why does baseball live on? Why doesn't something like this bring the game of baseball down?
Nothing seems to bring the game down, does it?
I mean, why?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the game is rooted so much in numbers. It's had so many reasons to be brought down. The cancellation of the World Series in 94, this, the 1990 scandal. It's a sport that's embedded in us in many ways, and I think that you know, it's so much a part of our culture and history that it can't be taken apart by some of these things, that it just finds a way to sort of get past them.
Yeah, it's sort of a subplot to the big picture of baseball. You agree, Lance?
Sure. The risk of the steroid problem is that it will drive fans away ultimately, because they will become convinced that the game is fixed and you'll be on the road to, you know, pro wrestling. If it can lasso the problem, I think baseball will have a wonderful, bright future.
Well, our thanks to Mark Fainaruwata and Lance Williams, investigative reporters for the San Francisco Chronicle and authors of the best-selling book, Game of Shadows. We also thank our audiences here and on the radio. I'm Marty Lurie, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.